Good morning, Council and staff. I'd like to call this meeting to order and acknowledge that we are in Mi'kma'ki, the traditional territory of the Mi'kmaq people. Are there any announcements, acknowledgements, and recognitions? Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
Thank you. I would like to read this statement in relation to the wildfires that we have experienced. On behalf of the municipality of the District of Lunenburg, I would like to extend our deepest gratitude and appreciation to the devoted, paid, and volunteer fire service members across Nova Scotia. Their unwavering commitment and selfless dedication in safeguarding lives and property deserve recognition and commendation. Fire service members play a crucial role in ensuring the safety and security of the community. Their tireless efforts, bravery, and expertise in emergency response are instrumental in protecting lives during critical situations. They are the unsung heroes who respond to the emergencies promptly, often putting themselves at great risk to rescue those in need. Our communities are indebted to their service and remains forever grateful for their selflessness and unwavering commitment. Residents have a role to play in helping during this crisis. As you know, there is a province-wide ban, or there had been, on setting fires for any reason within 1,000 feet of the woods, including private campground, provincial parks, and backyard fires. If you see a fire, please report it immediately. And yes, that ban is still in place. I'd like to take the opportunity to stress to residents the importance of having a grab-and-go bag ready in your home. A grab-and-go bag is a small emergency kit that's easy to take with you in case you need to leave right away. It should include items like ready-to-eat food, phone chargers and battery banks, flashlights, medications, copies of important documents such as insurance papers and identification, seasonal clothing and an emergency blanket, and pet supplies if you have pets. I encourage everyone to visit our Lunenburg Regional Emergency Management Organization website at lunenburgremo.ca for more details on being prepared for an emergency. And finally, I want to express my thanks to our REMO coordinator, Angela Hanhofer, as well as MODL staff Chris Kennedy, Bruce Parks, Morgan Kempton, and all other staff and council who have been contributing to the efforts in Shelburne. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Are there any more announcements, acknowledgements, or recognitions?
Yes.
Go ahead, Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
I also have a proclamation for World Ocean Day. A proclamation in support of the municipality of the District of Lunenburg recognizing and celebrating World Ocean Day 2023 and the advancement of ocean conservation in Canada. Whereas Wednesday, June 8th, 2023 is the 31st annual World Ocean Day. World Ocean Day is the United Nations Day for celebrating the role of the ocean in everyday life and inspiring action to protect it. Whereas countries around the world, including Canada as a prominent leader, has committed to protecting 30% of their ocean territory by 2030 in order to reverse nature loss in the ocean and safeguard at-risk marine life. Whereas the ocean is home to hundreds of species at risk, vulnerable ecosystems, and is a crucial carbon sink shielding us from the worst of climate change. Whereas the ocean produces over half of the world's oxygen and absorbs 50 times more carbon dioxide than our atmosphere. Therefore, protecting the ocean is in the interest of all life on Earth and communities both coastal and inland, as it is essential to our shared future. Whereas it is the jurisdiction of the Government of Canada under various pieces of legislation and regulation to establish marine protected areas in consultation with Indigenous peoples. Many Indigenous nations and communities are leading in the conservation of the ocean and have been stewards of the ocean since time immemorial. Whereas it is important for municipal leaders to demonstrate support for actions to safeguard the ocean as they have for action on climate change and other environmental matters of national importance. Whereas in celebrating the ocean and protecting its habitats and ecosystems, it can together raise the profile of ocean conservation's critical role in improving planetary health and slowing the crisis of species collapse and ecosystem decline. Therefore, be it resolved that the municipality of the District of Lunenburg recognizes the 31st anniversary of World Ocean Day on June 8, 2023, and supports national and international efforts to protect 30% of the ocean by 2030. And I so proclaim.
Thank you, Mayor Balofagetson. You got anything else? Go ahead. You're on the roll.
We have one other proclamation, and this is Parks and Recreation Month. Whereas in the municipality of the District of Lunenburg, we are fortunate to have a variety of recreation and parks systems providing countless recreational opportunities for residents and visitors from around the world. And whereas recreation enhances quality of life, balanced living, and lifelong learning, helps people live happier and longer, develop skill and positive self-image in children and youth, develops creativity, and builds healthy bodies and positive lifestyles. And whereas recreation participation builds family unity and social capital, strengthening volunteer and community development, enhances social interaction, creates community pride and vitality, and promotes sensitivity and understanding to cultural diversity. And whereas parks, open space, and trails provide active and passive outdoor recreation opportunities, help maintain clean air and water, and promote stewardship of the natural environment. And whereas the benefits provided by recreational programs, services and parks, and open space reduce health care and social service costs, serve to boost the economy, economic renewal, and sustainability, enhance property values, attract new businesses, increase tourism, and curb employee absenteeism. And whereas the municipality of the District of Lunenburg is encouraging citizens to track their active minutes each day for 30 days from June 1st to June 30th, 2023, as part of the Participaction Community Better Challenge, a national physical activity initiative that encourages Canadians to get active in search of Canada's most active community. Now, therefore, I, Carolyn Bolivar-Getson, Mayor of the Municipality of the District of Lunenburg, do hereby proclaim June 2023 as Parks and Recreation Month in the Municipality of the District of Lunenburg and encourage all citizens to recognize the benefits and values of recreation and parks in the district and participate in the many activities taking place this month and throughout the year.
Thank you, Mayor Bolivar-Getson. Anything else? Oh, there we go. We do have regrets from Councillor Oikle. I see there's nobody here for public input. Approval of the agenda. Moved by Councillor Greek, seconded by Councillor Haysom. All those in favour? Motion carried unanimously. Approval of the minutes of May 2nd, 2023. Moved by Councillor Deputy Mayor Hubley, seconded by Councillor DeLong. Discussion? All those in favour? Motion carried unanimously. Business rising, presentation, consideration of correspondence, recommendations, staff reports, the Finance Department. And we will turn it over to our Finance Director. And I'm at loss, Elena.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you have before you the proposed funding for the capital projects for 2022-23 and the Canada Community Building Fund investment, as well as your fourth quarter capital variance report. So financing of the 2022-23 capital projects has been allocated as per the approved budget, with the exceptions that are noted in the attached report on the spreadsheet that you have. Changes in financing can occur when a project's completed over budget or new sources of financing are found. A summary of all completed projects compared to budget is enclosed, and it serves as your fourth quarterly variance report for the capital fund and outlines the proposed funding of capital and CCBF projects. So many of our 2022-23 capital projects were budgeted to be funded out of our reserve funds. Under Section 99.4 of the MGA, council approval is required for all withdrawals from capital reserves. As well, council must approve all Canada Community Building Fund expenditures. Compliance occurs when council approves the capital budget that shows withdrawals from the reserves to fund the capital expenditures. And when funding changes are made at year end, council should be made aware of them and approval should be sought. So of the $8.8 million capital plan, In the 2022-23 budget, projects in the amount of $5.1 million were completed. Financing included $1.7 million in provincial and federal grants, $770,590 from general operating reserves, $98,580 from our sewer reserves, $364,291 from open space reserves, insurance recoveries for a damaged speed radar sign of $4,248, and just over $1 million from resident payments for the LaHave straight pipe replacement program, which also included a payback to the depreciation fund of $195,592. As we know, as residents continue to make payment on those straight pipe loans, those monies will go back into the depreciation fund. As well, the straight pipe program wrapped up over its five-year period with about $52,807 surplus, which will be transferred into a straight pipe operating reserve. That reserve will be used to cover future costs of remediating any system issues that might occur while the municipality owns them for those 7 years. And those would be issues that would not be the responsibility of the homeowner based on the homeowner agreement. The regular maintenance fees for installed systems are billed to property owners on the final tax bill until the 7-year municipal ownership expires. So it has nothing to do with any of those maintenance fees either. The Canada Community Building Fund spending for 22-23 totals just over $1.3 million, consisting of capital projects of $682,831. Contribution to non-owned trails of $59,850, rural broadband project costs of $232,763, and $384,243 in paving costs for non-owned roads in the operating fund. So staff has made a recommendation to ensure compliance with the Municipal Government Act and the federal CCBF agreement.
Okay. Questions? Discussion? Hearing none. I will ask Mayor Bolifer-Getson if she would put that motion on the floor.
To the chair and members of the Finance Committee, I move that the Finance Committee recommend to Council that Municipal Council approve the funding for the 2022-23 completed capital projects and CCBF investment as presented and summarized in the 2022-23 capital project and CCBF investment plan. And
moved
I so
by.
Move.
Moved by Mayor Bolifer-Getson, seconded by Councillor Bell. It's one of those days where the names aren't going to come real quick. Discussion. Ready for the question? All those in favor? Motion carried unanimously. We will now move down to Admin Department, Noise Bylaw and Bylaw Enforcement, and we will turn it over to Deputy CAO Alex Demerick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I get started, I'd like to acknowledge Xander Zwicker, who is with us as a co-op student for the last 5 weeks. He did some great work helping with jurisdictional scans for some of the work that you're seeing today, and he'll actually be presenting a little bit of the presentation this morning. I'm just making sure it's sharing properly. I'm doing it through Teams, Team. So if Council will recall, there was some discussion about noise complaints over the last couple of mainly summer seasons. Council directed staff to do some research on noise bylaws and in particular on the issues that surround enforcement. So this is a presentation to you this morning to fulfill that request. Because we're presenting information, I'd rather take a more informal approach. So if there are questions and comments, more questions. If there's questions, I'd love to receive them as we go so that we can elaborate as that information is available. And then we can have, we would expect to have some more discussion at the conclusion as we're looking for input and direction from the committee at that time. So I believe that's enough introduction. As I mentioned, we're going to cover off some of the issues around noise and the legislative framework that's available for municipalities to deal with those. Then we'll have some discussion about enforcement models, approaches to providing that enforcement, and issues that come up with those. And then I would expect a nice, robust policy discussion from committee members. So there are lots of ways that people can find noise to be a nuisance. Some of the most common forms are from entertainment and sound systems, either from special events and venues to pop-up venues or just house parties. And also a more common source of noise complaints in the last decade or so would be from temporary rentals. So people renting out second properties or owning properties just for the purposes of renting them on a short-term vacation-type basis, and then neighbors experiencing noise nuisance from those rentals. There are more commercial or industrial noises. A common source of noise complaints in the municipal environment are construction sites. Also things like generators or refrigeration trucks, which can sometimes cause nuisance, especially in more densely populated areas, where, for example, you have like a milk delivery person who has a unit that's has to be on all night and can disturb the neighbors. And then there are some more common, perhaps more rural sounds, which are sometimes considered a nuisance. So these can be from agricultural uses like noise cannons or farming equipment. Sometimes livestock themselves are the source of noise complaints. Certainly ATVs, motorized vehicles, boats, and sound systems on boats are a common source of noise complaints. And then just property maintenance equipments like chainsaw and mowers have been the source of noise complaints. So municipalities do have ability to look into and regulate noise. In Canada, noise can be regulated, and the purpose is to provide the right to quiet enjoyment, both of your own private space as well as public spaces. But this does have to be balanced with the right to freedom of expression and also individuals' right to pursue economic activity. So the options for addressing this, first and foremost, we would want council to remember that land use planning is an option and is a path to reduce the potential for noise complaints. And this is by reducing incompatible uses. So if you don't allow for noisy industrial operations in residential zones, you're going to limit the conflict that you have there. Similarly, you can get into things like prohibiting special events venues from happening in residential neighborhoods. So this doesn't work for complaints that you have in place, but certainly going forward, as you put land use planning in place, you'll have the potential to reduce those conflicting uses and therefore reducing noise becoming a nuisance.
I have Mayor Balafagetson.
So in relation to that with land use planning, if we were looking at businesses that are set up in our municipality, they would be grandfathered, but it could have future impact on things like future. I'm going to use a campground for an example.
Yep.
It would definitely have impact on them, or it would have impact on a campground expanding.
Absolutely.
As yep. well.
Yep. Yeah. So normally if something's there in place, it's either, as you say, grandfathered, so it could be a non-conforming use, or you could establish your land use planning that permits those things already but doesn't permit, for example, expansion.
Yep. And typically land use planning has been used in the past as a mechanism to stop something from coming to your area, whether that's an asphalt plant or a waste disposal,
yep.
whatever. That's usually when people
yes.
are up in arms and they would...
Yeah, certainly a preferred approach is to do it strategically and from a comprehensive perspective, but we've certainly experienced individual communities requesting land use planning in order to prevent a particular use from coming to their neighborhood. So another legal avenue for addressing nuisance noises is a criminal mischief charge. However, this requires a relatively high bar for prosecution because it is a criminal charge. So it's not perhaps the most effective way to address this. And then the subject that we have before us today is enabling legislation for municipalities permits the regulation of noise. So the authority for this comes specifically in Nova Scotia from Section 172 of the Act. So it can allow a council to define noise as a nuisance activity. It gives you the authority to classify a disturbance as an offense. You can enter onto property to investigate and or enforce, and it allows the authority for council to establish fines for violations of a noise bylaw. So I'll hand it over to Xander now, and he'll give us a little overview of existing noise bylaws in Nova Scotia.
So, well, of course, we are just going to talk about those. Well, first off, we need to start off with what actually is considered noise. All the bylaws have a very specific definition, which often include some different examples of what they would consider to be a noise that disturbs the peace of a neighborhood. So these are typically unmuffled engines, use of car horns. There's some detonation of explosives they mentioned, so that was typically about fireworks. And discharge of firearms, which they were some examples about, or rather exemptions for those regarding like a starter pistol or for dealing with nuisance wildlife.
Councillor Greek?
Thank you. In the detonation of explosives, does that include blasting for pits, or does that fall under
economic? I was going to ask the same thing. Yeah, pits and quarries.
There was actually quite a bit of discussion about those in some of the different bylaws regarding kind of what's allowed in for quarrying. So, yeah, that is something they do talk about.
Mayor Bolivagetson?
Where a pit is provincially regulated, the noise bylaw has no authority.
Okay,
so
good.
Where something's provincially regulated, for example, an agricultural use or a quarry, then the noise bylaw is superseded by that provincial regulation.
And under those provincial regulations, you have to have access to aggregate. So we have to allow it to come from somewhere. And it can only come from where it is in most cases. But I guess I wanted to go back, if you could go back one slide, Xander, and detonation of explosives. Is that fireworks?
Yes, it was. That was mostly what they were talking about. Right. They used kind of that more general term in the bylaw itself.
So road building would use a lot of explosive and detonation that way, but fireworks is probably the more common one that we're accustomed to.
So, Councillor Bell.
I'm aware of two yacht clubs in MODL that use propane cannons quite often on Tuesday nights. And it produces a very loud noise, same as the agricultural propane cannon. So have those ever been discussed in provincial bylaws?
Not that I can recall. Nothing like what that had been discussed. Of course, there was the mention with the bird cannons, but not for that specific use that you had mentioned.
Oh, did someone over there have their hand up? My question is, in some of these bylaws that you've researched for noise, when it comes to fireworks, is there a clause in any of them that for special occasions that you can have fireworks? And I'm thinking July 1st.
There are mentions for exemptions in regards to Canada Day, so... But they didn't say it was specifically about fireworks, but I imagine if they are providing exemptions for the date, it would involve things like that.
Thank you. Okay. Continue.
So a lot of these bylaws include quiet periods where they're specifically enforcing these restrictions on noise. Typically they're in the evening hours, so they often range from around 10 or 11 p.m. to 6 or 7. There is some variance between weekends or weekdays on how long those quiet periods last. And then in some of the bylaws, there were even distinctions not only from a day or night period, but they also had an evening where there were other more specific restrictions. But that wasn't that common. Most were more general. There were also some noises that they were often mentioned in regards to these quiet times. So use of sound systems. There's a lot of construction equipment usage like that, and then some more human noises that might come from like fighting, screaming, or the like.
Mm.
Common exemptions, so there was a lot about agriculture and natural resource to provide more accessibility for those activities. Emergency response, municipal events and work, government employees. There were specially permitted events, so like Canada Day or other religious activities like there, and then telecom and utilities were also often exempt. So penalties, it was pretty common to have increasing fines for repeat offenses up to kind of a three-tiered system in that regard, up to a maximum fine of around $10,000 in most cases. The minimum, there was a bit of a range, so about $50 to $500, depending on the municipality. And in some of the bylaws, there was a distinction between the owner of the property and the actual person, the tenant, let's say, that was responsible for that noise. And there was a statement that both the owner and the occupier, there's the word, were responsible for mitigating the amount of noise that might stem from a property. Here's kind of a summary of different comparisons between the municipalities reviewed. So there were very few that used a decibel reading as part of their definition. It was more common to just use a complaint system where if someone said that they were disturbed by the noise, then that was enough to classify it as a disturbance. The weekday quiet time, so again, these usually ranged from 10 or 11 p.m. until 6 or 7 a.m. with a few different distinctions there. The owner-occupier division, provision, that I had mentioned, was used a few times, but isn't that common in the bylaws. This might just be related to it not necessarily being an issue when those bylaws were created, so it wasn't something they had to think about at the time.
I have Councillor DeLong, sorry, Xander.
Oh, sure. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm just curious about Bridgewater having repealed their bylaw. Is there a reason given for that?
What I had heard was that there were issues around enforcement, so it wasn't something that they could reliably, consistently deal with, and there were also some trouble with, I guess you could say, malicious use of it, where it was just kind of people being spiteful toward their neighbors and kind of using that as a way that they could wield the municipality against each other.
Okay. Thank you.
And then
Mayor Balogh-Getson.
Oh, sorry.
I guess the other question that I would have on here, the fines are there, but success in actually prosecuting, do we know that?
Yeah, we're going to get to enforcement issues as move along.
Okay, Xander.
All right, sure. So I was just going to mention the fines there. All I really have to say is there's that bit of a range. It is pretty wide, depending on the municipality. Some of them are a bit more specific. Some are very specific, even. Then other than that, I just wanted to mention there was Bridgewater, like I had just discussed, and Mahone Bay. They have a almost 40-year-old bylaw that they currently have in place, but I wouldn't say it necessarily meets the standard of what we would might want to implement now. So it's not doesn't quite include the level of detail that we might be looking for.
Okay. And a similar situation there. They recently explored passing a modern noise bylaw and looked at enforcement issues and have not proceeded at this time.
Okay.
So drilling down a little bit into how noise bylaws work and some of the issues that council might want to consider, it becomes important to define noise based on what makes sense for your community, which may pose a challenge for such a large municipality as MODL. So you have different areas that might have a different idea of what would be considered a noise versus what's common sounds that would emanate from normal use of your property.
If I could, I'd like to make a comment on that, knowing that prominently rural communities have different expectations than denser town settings, but we have just heard that the town of Bridgewater have repealed their bylaw because of enforcement. So if a small area like that can enforce, I'm wondering, a large municipality?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's two issues in there. There is an enforcement issue that we're going to get to. The other issue is there are common uses, for example, roosters in a rural setting, which are less appropriate in a denser town setting. And because MODL has a range of communities, you have somewhere like New Germany, you may want to consider a noise bylaw which prohibits roosters. Just as an example, whereas in Cornwall, I wouldn't like that because I have roosters.
Roosters have a purpose.
Yeah. So there is the ability to tailor a noise bylaw so that you target different types of communities. So, for example, Kings County has a noise bylaw. It only applies to the village of New Minas. So you could look at something like that if this was an avenue that you were interested in pursuing. But the heart of the issue is the fact that what's considered a nuisance to some isn't considered a nuisance to all. And if you're going to venture down this road, we would suggest that you'd want to do at least some form of public engagement so that you could get a sense from your communities. Is there a broad understanding, sort of a base layer, that you would consider noise as a nuisance? Is there any kind of community consensus? And the experience that we've seen from around Nova Scotia is that usually there is not. But you can at least, if you're going to proceed this way, then you would want to get some sense of what's egregious and considered a nuisance no matter where, and focus on those issues rather than, for example, roosters in a rural municipality. So there are additional issues around the scope. As we've covered, you do have the authority to create a noise bylaw, but that authority is limited in a number of ways. So the first of which being, if you have a provincially regulated industry, the noises that come from that are excluded from your noise bylaw. So a regular source of noise complaints for this municipality are noise cannons associated with berry farms most commonly, and a noise bylaw will not address those. They're specifically excluded.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
Provincially regulated. Where does the Airbnbs fall?
Well,
they are in the process.
So your noise bylaw does have the authority to address, for example, a sound system which is causing a disturbance across property lines, even if it's coming from an Airbnb, which does have some level of provincial regulation. So it's more along the lines of practices. So agricultural practices are regulated by the province.
So different acts.
Yeah. So you are permitted, as long as you're within the bounds of normal agricultural practice, you're permitted to use those things. An Airbnb is a different case where there's some requirement for registration, but it doesn't get down into that level, and so the municipality retains the authority to regulate noise coming from a temporary rental, for example. So that's one limitation. The other limitation, which is commonly encountered, is the enforcement issue, particularly for residents that are not interested in complying. You know, with most types of enforcement issues, you have a range of responses when you come to someone and identify that they're violating a government regulation. So there's a good swath of folks that simply change their behavior. There's other folks that may appeal or challenge, and then there's certain folks that they become belligerent. So Xander has pointed out that there are a few bylaws which have incorporated decibel readings, and this is directly in response to prosecution issues where people have successfully challenged a noise bylaw because it wasn't specific enough to have a successful prosecution. So they've attempted to include decibel readings. Unfortunately, this hasn't significantly increased the success rate for prosecutions when it actually does come to court. Appellants have successfully challenged whether or not the decibel reader was properly calibrated, whether it was being maintained according to its normal schedule. Because they're not commonly used and not where there is enforcement that involves decibel readers, the enforcement officer is also doing other things. It's either a police officer or they're tasked with parking tickets and other types of things, which are a more common complaint. And so they aren't necessarily following to the letter of the manufacturer's specifications, the maintenance procedures, which has resulted in failing to get a successful prosecution.
Councillor Greig.
Thank you. The decibel readers, they would have to respond to that complaint immediately, correctly? Like, mm-hmm. It's not...
Yep.
If there's other issues going on elsewhere in our municipality, meanwhile, this neighbor is having an all-night rager, and numerous neighbors around them are recording it and then submit that as their complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any, would any of the bylaws that you looked into be able to factor that in, like the video or recording of neighbors?
So the decibel reading wouldn't work in that scenario. It would have to be an enforcement officer coming with the appropriate device. Under the more general bylaws, certainly having video or audio recording might help if someone were to challenge the summary offense ticket that they were handed. I don't have an answer for you as to whether or not that would strengthen the case or not. It is hard to judge from audio recordings. You know, is that a nuisance complaint or is that normal use? So it may help, but it also may not.
Okay.
Decibel usage, or including decibels, is there to try and improve enforcement. They've had limited success, municipalities that have adopted those. So they still report procedural challenges. And the folks that we did speak to who do have bylaw enforcement officers indicate that they really struggle with the enforcement of noise bylaws. Summary offense tickets are the best tool for enforcement, but it still doesn't deal with the folks who are less likely to comply anyways. So in those scenarios, having the RCMP visit and give a warning related to criminal nuisance because of an all-night rager, they're describing as just as effective as a noise bylaw, because the folks that are going to comply are going to comply with the RCMP warning just as readily as they'll comply with the threat of a summary offense ticket.
Councillor Bell, and then Councillor Haysom, and then Councillor Vino.
I find this issue somewhat challenging because when someone is being offended by noise, when they call their councillor, they're usually already frustrated and they expect that something can be done. And when I offer an explanation that the individuals that they're complaining about are not breaking the law, they get quite upset. These type of calls usually come in after 10 p.m. and there's no one else to call, but they feel that they're doing something to alleviate their problem by calling their counselor. I use the example in District 10 of the wedding barn. I really feel for these individuals, and I feel that there needs to be some way that we can help the residents that live in that general area. But I understand they may even be grandfathered in to continue their actions. So how do we address this? I'd like to have an understanding of that. Then you have District 9 that has the mark. And several times a year, I can listen to events in my backyard for hours straight, knowing who got first place, who got second place, and who's gaining on who. I don't know what the event is Well, I don't live in that community. I live on the opposite side of the river. Mm-hmm. But I can distinctly know exactly the names of the individuals because it's so loud and so clear that I think about these individuals that live in close proximity in Dayspring. What are they feeling? Do they get in their car and just drive away for the afternoon? And I think that is a facility that we support and we promote. Now, when I look at my own community and someone's having a wedding, I just smile because it's a family event. It's a special event to that family. And it only happens once or twice in a lifetime that they're in the community. And I may have been guilty of that myself. But usually in cases like that, people in the neighborhood are either invited or they think it's a good time and should just be overlooked. But if it happens every weekend in a commercial establishment, I would look at it quite differently. So while we're talking about examples, I really don't know. I can't offer any solutions, and I'm looking to staff to try to entice me how I might think of helping these people without having an actual bylaw. Thank you.
Councillor Haysom.
Thank you. Alex, I just wanted to touch on something you said about people maybe being more responsive to the RCMP coming and knocking on the door. I think part of the reason we're having this conversation around the table is because what we hear from residents is the RCMP say they will not address a noise complaint because we don't have a bylaw. Now, I know when I sat on the police advisory board, the RCMP assured us that, yes, they will go out if their resources allow, but somewhere along the way there's a disconnect. And so, you know, I think that the majority of people will respond to the RCMP coming along and saying, hey, you got to keep it down because you're bothering other people. But that's not happening. And so even though that conversation is happening at the level of the police advisory board to say this needs to be addressed, it's still not happening. The message the residents get is the RCMP will not respond unless there is a bylaw in place, even though we're told by the RCMP that's not true. That's what I think needs to be addressed. So I just wanted to highlight that at this point in the conversation. Thank you.
Councillor Vino?
Councillor Haysom pretty much said what I was going to say as well. The RCMP come up to me in a social setting frequently to touch base on the amount of calls that they get on this one particular property in District 10. And I feel for them as well because they could be taking away from something else that's an emergency, and there doesn't seem to be a solution that we have right now. So I look forward to hearing more about this bylaw during this presentation.
Deputy Mayor Hoobley.
I just want to add that I do know that RCMP do go out. I've been at a wedding that the whole community knew, and the RCMP did come out. So it's not that they don't come out, and it's not that they won't come out. They do.
The messaging source is different. Yeah, well, we're going to get down right into the enforcement stuff. It's coming. Promise.
Okay, so anything, Mayor Balogh-Getson, did you want to speak before? Okay, Alex, continue.
So another issue that council should consider when weighing whether or not to pass a noise bylaw is this would be the creation of a new or an increased service to your residents. So we would expect that you would see an increased volume of calls. As has already been identified, response from the RCMP currently is spotty, and once you have a bylaw in place, the lack of enforcement capacity will then create a new kind of complaint. So you won't just get complaints about noise, you'll get complaints about the fact that you have a bylaw that you can't enforce.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a concern, as Xander has alluded to, anytime you create a system that relies on neighbor complaints for enforcement, you have the opportunity for it to become weaponized in neighborly disputes that likely aren't focused on noise, but it becomes a vehicle for mm-hmm. residents to club each other over the head, figuratively, not literally. And that does also bring up the concern around implicit biases that may exist within either the enforcement folks or those folks that are lodging the complaints. So, for example, there is often a difference in socioeconomic class between folks that complain about a dangerous and unsightly premises versus those who are the subject of a complaint about a dangerous and unsightly premises. And without paying very careful attention to that, you would likely see the same pattern in terms of trying to enforce a noise bylaw, where it would predominantly be coming against folks that have less influence or authority in a community. So just to sum up before we move over to the enforcement issue, we would encourage council to continue along your work with comprehensive land use planning. This will help in the long run by minimizing the potential for conflicting uses before they're developed. And just a quick note to make sure it's clear, the conversation around grandfathering applies to land use, not to noise bylaws. So noise bylaws apply across the municipality because it's related to a nuisance. So it doesn't matter if a facility already exists there. Before you pass the noise bylaw, they would all be subject to the noise bylaw as long as it wasn't exempted for some other reason, like a provincially regulated agricultural activity. If you do proceed down this road, you need to be fully aware that this won't fully address noise issues, that you will have enforcement issues and there are exemptions, and you're increasing the service level, so there'll be new costs for the municipality. And before you walk down this road, you want to be very careful that you have developed a definition of what a nuisance noise is that suits your municipality.
Mayor Bala-Begetson?
I just want to go back to that piece about grandfathering. So if it is a commercial venue in your municipality, mm-hmm. you can put a bylaw in place to limit the amount of noise that would be going on there.
Yeah.
So that would be your campgrounds, that would be everything out there.
That's where you see municipalities using quiet periods. So
after certain hours.
Exactly. So you could have a wedding venue that could be having PA systems that creating noise that some neighbors might find a nuisance, but you could tailor your noise bylaw to permit those things up to a certain period. And some municipalities do it on a weekday. You can have them up to a certain amount of time. On a weekend, you might extend that period, and then you would have a quiet period where, for example, having a sound system that is audibly heard off of your property would constitute a violation of the noise bylaw.
So where you would neighbor on a public or a commercial property or mm-hmm. a not-for-profit community hall,
yep,
from garden parties to whatever,
yep.
There's always someone that is close enough that would be able to hear this. You could still put exemptions in place, I would hope.
Yes, so as Xander has touched on,
yeah.
Quiet periods is one mechanism to tailor that. So you allow for commercial activity during waking hours, essentially. You also, municipalities put in place the ability to apply for a permit to hold an event, which would give you an exemption from the noise bylaw. So that's one way that municipalities mm-hmm. address, for example, a Canada Day thing, is that, oh, the Legion is going to be hosting a dance and they're going to put on fireworks. So they would apply. It would come to municipal staff. We would review that it met the criteria that council had outlined in your bylaw. And then you'd issue a permit which would allow them to have fireworks that, under normal circumstances, without a permit, would be a noise violation. But they've used a permit to get around that.
Just one up. One other comment.
Go ahead, yeah.
Does this pertain to kids, too?
The bylaw doesn't discriminate based on age.
So I guess I'm just looking at some people do find children on playgrounds in different areas offensive. I'm just...
Yeah, so, yeah, that and that would, you know, hours of parks operations also comes into play there.
Those are daytime hours.
Yeah, so you'd be looking at a quiet period versus a daytime, and certainly you would have... That's an issue that you need to pick up as you define what noise is, that you're not creating a bylaw that prohibits children from hooting on the playgrounds during regular hooting hours.
Right. Councillor Staton.
Thank you. I sat and listened, and I know when I first came here, I was all about enforcing or having a noise bylaw. And the longer I'm here, the more I see it it has some uses, but it's very prohibitive. And we're being a less tolerant society every day. People come here and they say, oh, we came for the quiet, now we don't want things happening around us. And in order to do economic development, you need to have noise. That's the way it is. It makes noise. So you can't expect to live in a rural community and prohibit any kind of economic development, because that is not what it's all about. Most of the complaints I get are about short-term rentals, and they rent to one person, and there's 25 or 30 there partying 24/7 for 2 or 3 days. And when you talk to the RCMP, they say that they only come out in extreme circumstances. I've had calls, and it's drug or alcohol related before they will come out. Well, most of those parties are just that, drug and alcohol related, but they need some proof of that before they will actually show up. And I think that we are putting a pickleball court next to apartment complexes, and we're going to stab ourselves in the foot, probably, because those things, whether you believe it or not, are noisy. I live next door to one, across the street from one, and I know they start at 7 in the morning, and they usually go till dark, and they're noisy. All day long, you get that click, 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 click. It's just like a ball field where you know who's on first and second. Uh-huh. You know, so it's that kind of thing that we have to be really careful of when we're putting this bylaw in place. I'd like to see something to do with fireworks, to have an actual permit to light off fireworks, no matter where you are or when it's happening, because we have no control over that. And it's not only noisy, it can be dangerous. You know, so I would like to see something along that line. I'd also like to see us talk to the RCMP, maybe send it to the Police Advisory Board and ask for their input and what they see is the best way to do that. And I would really like to see that happen before we actually do a bylaw, because I don't see an enforcement officer with MODL doing this because of the personal liability.
So we have consulted with the RCMP. We have considered the discussions at the Police Advisory Board, and we're going to touch on that as we get to the enforcement component.
I thought you were finished.
No, just part one. Okay. Here comes part two.
Those are my thoughts on it anyway, but I certainly, I'm on that advisory board for the last year, and I don't remember that discussion coming to the board, except that I did raise the question of why don't you go out when you're called, and that's what I was told. So,
Councillor Greek.
Thank you. I receive quite a few noise complaint calls, mostly in the summer, as you mentioned, Alex. Some of which have sort of been covered, the noise cannons. I receive quite a few calls regarding that, and quarry-related noises. The other complaint, oh, and generator-related noises. I do hear a lot about generators from camps. The other thing I hear the most about is loud music, not necessarily from short-term rentals, just from not the most pleasant neighbors. And having music blasting all day, whether they're home or not, or taking their boat on the lake and blasting music, and it echoes around the lake. That's people are very unhappy in certain communities of the municipality because of certain people and the volume of music. And it's we have people considering leaving our municipality because of their neighbors. And I'm sure there's other reasons, like for other people leaving too. But there's little pockets. How can we help? Like I get residents just crying and in tears that they don't feel safe at home because of the constant blaring of inappropriate music coming out of the neighbors' windows and through their speakers, and they've installed outside speakers or their boats out on lakes. Like, what can we do to help them?
It's such a difficult question. When you look at enforcement and you take, for example, speakers on a boat, the likelihood that you're going to be able to enforce a noise bylaw on a moving vehicle on a body of water virtually zero. So that's an excellent illustration of a pinch point, a real community concern that the noise bylaw, even if you put it in place, will not address. The enforcement issues around a house party in a municipality of this size are challenging enough, but then you put it into a moving thing that's projecting noise over a large area, and the likelihood that you're going to get an enforcement officer there on time to issue a summary offense ticket is extremely low. So that's the challenge before council today, is that you have these nuisance behaviors from a small fraction of your population, and you have an imprecise tool at best to address it.
Before you go on to enforcement, I might have missed this. I know it was in the first part of either Xander's or your presentation. Chainsaws. Was there a discussion? I had to take a phone call. Was there a discussion on chainsaws? Because I'm wondering, this is Lunenburg County, and everybody's got a chainsaw. They all don't use it, but everybody's got a chainsaw. So anyway, in the heat, when it's hot summer, they have to get out into the woods before it gets too hot, because it's one thing, it's unsafe health-wise. A bylaw would, if we did have a bylaw, I'm hoping that there would be lenience, because we are rural. People have to get up early and cut up their wood before the heat gets, because I know I've had complaints already right in New Germany that the power saw was going at 6:30 in the morning. Well, it was the middle of August. He wanted to get his firewood cut up before the day got too hot. But these people came from other places where there was noise bylaws. And I explained, we don't have a noise bylaw. This is very common.
Yep.
So anyway, I'm just put that plug in your ear.
That's where the public engagement becomes important.
And that's where you're going to get your...
Yep. So you could regulate chainsaws. You would likely want to avoid those during your regular period. But then the question becomes, when do you start?
Yeah. You start before 6:30.
Yeah.
And so then are you creating your quiet period to begin at 6? And is that too early for some activities, but not for chainsawing?
I think something like this, when you look at the whole picture, I understand completely the issues that are in some districts, Chastity's, Michelle's and other districts. I understand that completely, but when you look at the whole picture, we are a municipality, a district of Lunenburg. We are rural communities, and what is it that we plan on shoving down the throats of our residents? And they're gonna be not happy at all. I have Councillor Haysom, and who else did I have? Mayor Balvergetson, your way. Okay, Councillor Haysom.
Thank you. It's just one other. Noise complaint that I've gotten, and it is a kind of a challenging one, is about engine braking. And that is one that would be dealt with by TIR Public Works, depending on the speed limit. But what happens is, if you are in an area that is quite built up and there are a lot of residences, but your speed limit is 60 kilometers an hour, then DOT won't put that in place, and then it comes down to, we have no noise bylaw. So there are people who may live close to a quarry, which is provincially regulated, and we can't say anything about that. But then you have trucks rushing through, engine braking at all hours of the day. And again, we don't have a mechanism. So I just wanted to raise that, because it's not one that was mentioned in this presentation. Thanks.
Isn't jake braking a safety issue when you're going?
Where you are.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, thank you. All right, anybody else before I leave Alex continue? Okay.
So moving on to enforcement, just broadly speaking, there are different approaches to enforcement. So one example is looking at enforcing via complaints, which is certainly a more cost-effective approach. That's the way that we manage our dangerous and unsightly process. It's also the way Nova Scotia Environment addresses complaints about straight pipes or septic violations.
excuse me, I got a call.
So those are two examples of different amounts of resources applied to a complaint-based process. So you can see the kinds of issues that might arise if you under-resource a complaint-based process. It becomes apparent that it's an ineffective system. You're also more prone to those neighbor disputes, using government processes as a weapon against another neighbor, and the potential for bias in how you judge the merits of a complaint. A more proactive enforcement model would involve something, you know, our building inspection is an example of more a proactive approach where you have to apply for a permit in order to do something, and then we have a set of inspections that come along with that. Regulating food processes is another example of a more proactive approach. And then you have patrols, for example. The RCMP are out there on the highways monitoring for violations of the Motor Vehicle Act. So they don't wait for a complaint about speeding to go out and write a ticket. I also wanted to make sure we brought up the concept of a graduated compliance approach. So this is very much at the heart of how our municipality deals with waste-related complaints. Our enforcement is done through the Municipal Joint Services Board, but they take a problem-solving and a de-escalation approach. They're working on education to try and get residents to understand the importance of the bylaw and why you would want to comply with it. And then they have additional enforcement tools, but they work their way up to those, and they work on getting homeowners to voluntarily comply with, for example, sorting their waste or not illegal dumping before they get to writing a summary offense ticket. We currently are engaged in bylaw enforcement, even though we don't have a bylaw enforcement officer on staff directly with the municipality. But we have a number of issues in our parks, which would be useful if we did go down the road of bylaw enforcement to include that in that scope. We're currently getting lots of complaints about overnight camping, and those are certainly ramping up. Use of fires, drinking, and after-hours use are common complaints that we're getting about our park system. Certainly the use or how people interact and bring their dogs to parks, whether it's permitted, whether they're on leash, whether they're cleaning up after them. And some of our parks like Sawpit, Wharf, or Hurdles, we have issues with parking, particularly with trailers, RVs, and boat-type stuff. So that's an area where we're currently using park staff, which are a touch overstretched and not trained for enforcement, certainly not graduated compliance approaches to try and address these concerns. Our dangerous unsightly processes are currently done through our building inspectors. Animal control is a place where we're doing bylaw enforcement, so we have our dog bylaw. We have a contract through Chester with a third-party provider who provides the bylaw enforcement and the kenneling service, although we do expect that provider to retire probably in the next contract cycle that we have with that company. So that'll become a question for us to address. And then as I've mentioned, the MJSB provides bylaw enforcement around illegal dumping and improper sorting. And then coming down the pipe, we have this question around noise complaints, which we don't currently have a bylaw for. And as we know, with land use planning, we will have to address folks using property that violates the land use bylaw. We don't have a lot of hard data on exactly how many noise complaints we're getting. We tried to get some information from the RCMP going through their quarterly reports over the last number of years. Noise complaints fall under mischief, preventing lawful enjoyment of property, and there are about 20, on average, it's roughly 20 complaints a month that are investigated, but please bear in mind these are not all noise bylaws, so this would be property damage, mischief, possible criminal nuisance charges, including noise violations.
Does that also include domestic disputes in
yep.
that? Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So this is not a good barometer. And council members, you've provided great examples of noise bylaws that we're getting, but we're not tracking those. We're not asking council members to track those, so we don't have a good quantification of the volume of complaints that we would have here. Out of interest's sake, April gathered dog barking complaints for us, which are enforceable under our bylaw, and there are, what's that say, 12? An average of 12 per year. So the RCMP did provide us with a response in writing about this issue in itself. So they definitely reiterated that an ordinary noise complaint is not sufficient to meet the test of criminal mischief. So their position is that they would be laughed out of court. The prosecutor won't even take this kind of thing. So they don't have an effective means to pursue this if the only issue is noise. And so their position, therefore, is that a municipal noise bylaw would expand the tools that are available for the RCMP to address this kind of issue. If we were to pass a noise bylaw, the RCMP would be able to issue a summary offense ticket, and they could investigate violations of the bylaw. So they went on to explain that RCMP resources are finite and they have lots of other things to address. So they would obviously continue to use a process that would prioritize things that they needed to respond to. And as you can imagine, noise bylaws, in terms of risk of safety to human life or risk to property damage is low. Compared to some of the other calls that they may get. So we can expect that the response would not be adequate to address the concerns we'd be getting from the residents. And certainly that experience is borne out from both our neighboring municipalities as well as we did a jurisdictional scan. RCMP, through police advisory boards and communication with municipal staff, indicate that yes, they do enforce those things. Practice on the ground is that resources are stretched too thin to provide any kind of effective enforcement. There are two models for enforcing noise bylaws in Nova Scotia. The first being exclusively through the police service. So this is the only example we saw of this was the town of Lunenburg, where they have no bylaw enforcement officer, but they do have a noise bylaw and they rely on the RCMP for enforcement. The other model is where the municipality has a bylaw enforcement officer, but we found no examples where anyone relies exclusively on a bylaw enforcement officer to enforce the noise bylaw. They all use some form of at least after hours assistance from the RCMP for enforcement. So in terms of the effectiveness of those models, relying exclusively on the RCMP is not satisfactory. So the RCMP that we spoke to provide that service to the town of Lunenburg, and they report a 0% success rate in having noise infractions investigated or addressed. So we would strongly recommend you don't pursue that as a permanent solution if you go down this road. Even when there is a hybrid model where there is a bylaw enforcement staff or staff people in place, they report issues with enforcement. So the most common issue is after-hours coverage. Bylaw enforcement officers never enforce just the noise bylaw. They usually have other duties. Most of their office or most of their hours happen during office hours to address other types of concerns. And even where you do have, for example, the town of Wolfville, where they have a high student population and often frequent issues with noise and partying, so they stagger hours with a part-time officer, they still have to rely on RCMP for assistance in terms of coverage, and they still report issues, both with their own enforcement officer and with RCMP having enough resources to address complaints.
Mayor Balbagetson.
I guess the one that I see on here, Queens, how do they address?
They have a bylaw enforcement officer. The bylaw enforcement officer reports very low volume of noise complaints. no noise complaints occurring during normal business hours, and very low success rate in terms of.
So they only have their enforcement officer during daytime hours.
Yep. And then every enforcement officer that we spoke with identified issues with prosecution. So getting to a noise complaint in a timely fashion, getting the information together, and simply having people comply with the complaint to turn down the volume when they get visited. They report that as being an issue.
Mayor Baldwin-Getson and then Councilor Greek.
So I guess in relation to the prosecution piece, do we have any idea on costs associated with some of the municipalities that have tried to pursue it through the court system?
No, actually, we all of the municipalities that we spoke to, nobody had any contemporary examples of pursuing a complaint. So there were the odd summary offense ticket that had been written in the last couple of years. None of those had gone to prosecution. They mostly reported issues with responding in a timely way in order to even issue a ticket.
Councilor Greek.
Thank you. I don't want to take away people's freedom. I don't want us to tell people what they are and are not allowed to do on their property when it comes to chickens or chainsaws or anything like that. The ongoing complaints I receive from the same people about their neighbor and the music. And I understand if they're not listening to RCMP, they're not going to listen to bylaw enforcement. But my question is about the criminal law. So we keep referring to criminal mischief in this presentation. Is that the same thing as disturbing the peace, or is there two separate offenses? Is that a separate charge? I guess my question's for Tom.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. So one neighbor disturbing another actually is civil. It's a private nuisance. And you can commence an action in Supreme Court for compensation and possibly injunctive relief. So at its essence, it's not criminal. You only make it criminal when you put a bylaw in place and then try to enforce it, and it becomes quasi-criminal because it's a bylaw, not part of the criminal code. All of the challenges that Alex has gone over are real. So if you have a decibel reading and the officer can't get there while the party is on, you can't prosecute because you can't meet the decibel threshold. So they have to be responsive and be able to get there while the party's going, which means at night, and they shouldn't go alone. And so they should have the RCMP with them, which means they have to wait for the RCMP, which likely means they won't get there while the party is on. So the host of challenges on the enforcement side also move into the court side. So you have to hire a prosecutor because the Crown won't do it for you. So we'd have to get a lawyer to attend court for us so they have their prep time. Then the hierarchy in provincial court, federal cases go first. Provincial cases go second, municipal cases go third, if there's time. And if there's no time, the lawyer has sat there all day with an RCMP officer or the bylaw enforcement officer who's the witness, so they're not out doing what they have to do. And even in the event of a conviction, it's more common than not for provincial court judges to remit the fine and reduce it to $50 or $100. And send them on their way because they don't treat it as terribly serious. So even at the end of the day, the message that the offender gets is, you had a party, you have a $50 fine, you pay your fine, you go have another party. Mm. Cost of doing business. So it's when you're looking at the balance, should the municipality, as you've indicated, should the municipality be in the role of determining what people can do on their property vis-a-vis noise? Do you make it a bylaw and enforce it, or do you leave it to the civil courts to address? Because the civil court is more capable of dealing with it. They can put a monetary penalty. It's more expensive to do. But you see private nuisance cases for everything from noise to odor, even tree roots. Like if you have a tree on your side of the line and its roots come over to my property, Yeah. Now I can sue you. Yeah. So we that always exists, but there's a real challenge here for us to enforce, to successfully prosecute, and then whether that even makes a difference because the fines are likely going to be so low that it's not prohibitive.
So right now, our residents just rely on RCMP. If there is something happening and like four of the neighbors are all calling, would the RCMP be more likely to come quicker?
That's four low-level calls. I don't think four low-level make, a bigger call.
Okay.
It's the nature of the call. So certainly what we don't want to happen is the RCMP to be responding to that, which takes them out of the area where they're really needed. But they manage that on their own.
Okay.
And they triage or they put a priority on the calls. Mm-hmm. So it's when council's trying to get their heads around this, there's an issue that's been identified, but what's the best solution? We can put in a form of solution that may not work really well, but it may be better than nothing. Or we can leave it to residents to take it into their own hands and proceed civilly through private nuisance.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Don't like anything you just said, but it's the law, so I appreciate it. So I won't shoot the messenger. But I appreciate your knowledge. It definitely comes in handy on stuff like this. Just to clarify one question about civil. Does civil mean neighbor against neighbor? A neighbor can take their neighbor to court for that. Can you just speak a little bit?
Sure. About that? So under the law of private nuisance, if your neighbor, and this is more generally, not just the person next to you, but if someone in close proximity to you does something that they're legally entitled to do on their land but impacts your enjoyment of your property, you can sue them. The most common example, the one we use in law school, is the pig barn mm-hmm. next to your house and the smell from the pig barn. So that traditionally would be treated as a private nuisance because of the odor. But it also can be light, it can be sound, it can be underground, slope. If you do something with your property and it causes runoff to come down and it puts dirt on your land, that's a private nuisance. And these are, the law is very clear on what constitutes them. The compensation is questionable because you don't get money for pain and suffering. You just get compensation for actual damage if it occurred. Although the courts are imaginative on when they come up with the general damages. But it's different than trespass. So if in trespass, that's when someone physically enters on your property and does damage. That's a civil action in trespass. If they never actually enter on your property but impact your enjoyment and use of your property, that's a private nuisance. And then there's another area of law called public nuisance, but that's wholly different.
And just one follow-up quickly, if I may. If it's neighbor against neighbor, and the neighbor who complained is found to be sided with, can they still go on to continue, or is there a law put in place that says they have to stop?
So the Supreme Court has the ability to put in what's called injunctive relief, which is a prohibition. So it says you can't do something, and if you do it, then you're breaching a court order, which becomes criminal, which is prosecuted by the Crown Attorney and enforced by the RCMP. But you'd have to first get the Supreme Court to issue an order saying someone can't do something. But more typically, you just get money. But if there's a group of people that are all being impacted negatively by the same source, they could all come together as a group. There's another case of a group of chicken farmers brought an action against a company that was putting what they considered to be pollution into the air that was negatively impacting the chickens. There's also cases of mink farmers bringing actions against airplanes, like Air Canada for their flight pattern. Apparently, if mink are startled by planes, they'll eat their young, and the young are what they grow and kill and get fur from. So there's been cases on that as well. Hmm. Yeah. So find a good lawyer and go civilly.
Yeah. Okay. Back to Alex. Yeah.
So we're finish lines in sight here. We just want to look at what those different models could be for the municipality if you were to go down the road of a noise bylaw. So the least cost option is to use the RCMP. We know already from other people's experience, other municipal experiences, that this will result in complaints from residents about lack of enforcement, and we will still have those prosecution costs. It also doesn't do a great job in terms of following the best practice of having a graduated compliance model. You could go down the road of hiring an in-house bylaw enforcement officer. So the benefit of this approach is you have maximum control over the service, both the development, so you can incorporate all of those best practices, and also the delivery. You have full direction over what that employee is doing. It would avoid having to, for example, negotiate an intermunicipal agreement, so it would be faster. This is likely the most expensive way to go about pursuing it, and you will almost certainly have inadequate coverage and specialization here. So you're not going to be able to provide 24-hour coverage. You will have that safety concern because it's unlikely that you're going to be able to staff every shift with two bylaw enforcement officers. So you won't be able to respond to very many noise complaints in real time. Just as a thought exercise, we looked at salaries for bylaw enforcement officers, and this is a modest service that we costed out. Just looking at annual operating costs, hire a full-time officer and two part-time officers. Again, this will not get you 24/7 coverage. It would get you some staggered coverage for off-business hours. You'd have training costs, supplies, office expenses, and vehicle operation costs. So you're looking at somewhere in the range of $235,000 a year for an in-house bylaw enforcement service. That doesn't include capital costs. So if you wanted to buy decibel readers, these types of employees would need vehicles, so you'd have those capital costs, those types of things, and you have to house them somewhere. So an alternative would be to develop a regional shared service, something like either your REMO, your shared building services, or a municipal joint services board service. So the benefit of this approach is you definitely would have a greater ability to provide coverage because you're providing bylaw enforcement over a larger population. You're sharing those costs with other units. So it would be a more robust service, and therefore you'd also have likely better training and specialization. It would also likely give you the opportunity to look at addressing some of the other enforcement concerns that are either in front of you right now, like around your parks, or that you know are coming down the road as your animal control contractor likely approaches retirement. The downside of this approach, it does take more time to negotiate an intermunicipal agreement and set up a regional shared service. And the governance is indirect, so it's slightly less control than if you have an employee of your CAO. You can give pretty explicit direction. With a shared service, it's mediated a little bit. So you have to go through that regional body, and you recognize that you have three or four other municipalities who are looking for specific service from that staff complement. You also have the option of contracting with a third party. This is not very common in Nova Scotia, although HRM does some bylaw enforcement through contract. So they're not city employees, for example, that write parking tickets. Noise bylaw is done by municipal staff, but it's not unheard of, and it is more common at West. So the benefit of this is you do avoid some of the costs and work of having to set up the service yourself. You simply create the RFP and look for companies to bid. Because it's not very common in Nova Scotia, You may be subject to price volatility because there's not a lot of players in the market. So that could be a downside on, mm-hmm. on the cost front. So again, please continue with your MODL 2040 work. We strongly believe that creating comprehensive land use planning is a good thing from a strategic perspective and will help prevent future conflicting uses. If you do pursue a noise bylaw, we would say you could go through with enforcement through the RCMP as your interim enforcement mechanism, but it would be unwise to proceed with that option as your permanent solution. And then you may want to consider whether you proceed down the noise bylaw route or not. You may want to look at addressing some of the enforcement gaps mm-hmm. that you have right now. And if you were to do that, we wouldn't suggest you do it on your own. So the MJSB is the most likely route there. So council could consider writing a letter to the MJSB asking for the board to evaluate a shared bylaw enforcement service. We would expect that you'd want them to look at, does that make most sense for them to provide it? Or is there a contracted service that will be available, and do some analysis, both on the cost side and the governance side?
I have Councillor Vino.
A few slides back, you had listed some of the calls that come in now. I'll give you an example, overnight parking. What kind of mechanism is in place right now for enforcing these rules on MODL property? Can you just take me through what that would look like?
Yeah, so we don't have a parks bylaw with offenses that identifies these things. Most of our rules come from signage and sort of policy and process that we put in place. So we don't have a formal bylaw to rely on, for example, to write a summary offense ticket. And currently it's either groundkeepers or actual park staff who are on the ground and witness the issue, or we get a call and then municipal staff here from the municipal services building has to either call or go out and address it. And it is not effective. It's not in the normal training or steps that we would have, for example, for a groundskeeper. So it often falls to, for example, our director of recreation to try and deal with someone who's got an RV parked at a place that's clearly not intended for RVs.
I worry about safety of our, mm-hmm. of, you said, Trudy said, well, our staff going out and knocking on a camper and saying, gotta go.
Yep.
I think this is a little bit bigger than just noise bylaw. I think there's other things that this could encompass if we're looking at something. I'm thinking of a presentation we had a little while ago. While it's not a MODL park, camping is still happening, and it seems to be more at Sawpit Wharf. Something to think about.
Mayball Vergessen.
I believe that.
I just want to make sure. There's three more slides. I'm
going to
let him
finish. Okay. Finish, Alex. Yeah.
So just trying to put a bow on everything. If you do create a bylaw, it will increase service expectations for residents. It will create a new cost center for you. Reports from other units, we've been over this. I think the main theme we're trying to draw out for you is that a noise bylaw is an imperfect tool. So it's not going to fully address those complaints, and you are going to receive enforcement concerns no matter which avenue you take to pursue it. So we just want to make sure council's got their eyes wide open that if you do go down this road, even if you take the step of engaging the public and creating the best possible definition of noise, there will still be issues and there will still be things outside of the scope of the bylaw which won't address the concerns we know some residents are having. So we just want to make sure that council is having a careful and informed discussion before proceeding.
Okay.
All done.
Did you want to speak, Carolyn?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to speak. I've been around this table for a while. And the noise bylaw has definitely been around this table for a while. It started back in the late 90s, and Kathy raised one of the issues, and that was around residents moving in from other areas and finding certain noises that are, I would say, typical in a rural municipality or Lunenburg County for sure, being offensive. And that noise was the noise of a power saw. And these individuals were very upset that a power saw could start at 6 o'clock in the morning and we would not shut them down. I guess I grew up around these practices.
So did I.
And I understand that if you're not in the woods at daybreak, you're not going in the woods to make a contribution to your livelihood because you're out by dinner time because it's too hot to be in the afternoon.
I remember that.
So that's likewise in the Christmas tree industry. It's likewise in the forestry sector and likewise in many other sectors that are out there now with the byproducts of these. So it started there, and again, it came to the table and was not successful. These nuisances have gone on and on. I think the one that we really deal with a lot, and I don't really think that a bylaw is going to stop it, and that's neighbor versus neighbor. And we have a lot of neighbor versus neighbor disputes that we're hearing about around our table, and yes, they reach out to the local councillor because they are that individual closest to the people, and you hear that. We do have some commercial venues that have set up, but again, we did not have land use bylaws in place that restricted this type of development. And that's why I said earlier that usually land use planning came into effect because of something that someone didn't want, the not in my backyard policy. And to do this at this point in time, I think that we're in the middle of MODL 2040. I think that it's a great avenue to get that feedback from the public, but I definitely don't want to shut down economic development. And I know that I've had the opportunity to talk to the owners of some of these venues, and they go out of their way to tell me some of the things that they're trying to put in place to limit the complaints that they are getting. In relation to noise and parking and all kinds of other things that may come up during that. One of the issues that was just put forward was the use of RVs and tents. And I look at that two different ways now. Before, yeah, it may have been the guy from out of town coming in and setting up his RV, whatever. We do have homeless people, and we do have people that are living in tents. And I'll go to the HRM for a bigger example, where they've actually looked at it differently and they've created space for tents and they've actually put porta potties in place and some other services because we don't have the housing. There is absolutely nothing available out there that is affordable to a lot of people. And at the recent FCM conference, I spent a lot of time looking at pods and how quickly they could be set up and what type of housing they may actually be able to provide to residents in our municipality. And might this be an option? Again, land use planning, or it would be offensive to some people in our municipality to have this development close to them. I know it would be. They would not like this, but we have to look at all avenues of society when we look at this. Now, the civil piece, there's absolutely nothing stopping individuals from pursuing it individually. And in most cases, when it's this neighbor versus neighbor, that's exactly what should be happening. The one-offs, I really think that the community is okay with the one-offs, the weddings, the things that are going off on an annual basis. But it's the every weekend, and I understand that. The other thing that really has come into play are the Airbnbs. And I think that one of the things that I've read recently in relation to Airbnbs is they're trying to put something in place to limit who can rent a property and whether or not they're only renting for that weekend time frame and should it be a longer time frame. And I guess with Airbnb, and I do rent them, and in other provinces usually. And when I do that, the one thing you want to make sure is that you get a good review because I want to be able to come back to that property or another property. And if you get that bad review, it definitely limits who's going to rent you a property. So there are some things in place, and I think that pushing harder with the regulations on that end, and we do have the capacity municipally, I believe Tom as well, to put things in place around some of these with the current legislation that the province has passed.
Yeah, HRM is trying to get an expanded ability to specifically deal with Airbnbs, both through land use planning and then other bylaw enforcement tools.
So I think there are ways around that piece too. I look at the use of bylaw enforcement officers, and when I see our neighbors that are not able to enforce noise bylaws and have eliminated that from their toolbox, I think that speaks volumes. Because if a municipality with their own municipal police force and everything else is not able to do this, how can a municipality the size of ours even think about trying to do that? And I think that that there is one of the things that really stick out. So the Jake breaks was mentioned, and yeah, I guess we were instrumental in getting a Jake break sign, what I call Blockhouse Hill, which is going down to the four-way stop. But to neighbors who still live there, they still do it. And there are truck drivers out there that just overuse the use of a Jake break. They just like to hear that sound when they go down over a hill. And yes, it is annoying if you have a property around it, but it definitely is loud. But there are going to be lots of nuisances out there. And I guess one of the things that I will go back to is how much do we want to restrict the enjoyment of one's property by certain things here? And there will be noise. There will be noise. I look at the South Shore exhibition, and I was on the board there. And at one point, it was after a certain hour that the organization said that the noise wouldn't be there after 11 o'clock at night. But again, there are things that Canada Day can put in place, that other things can put in place, and we can encourage those things to happen. But $250,000 to start for an enforcement system. And yeah, we can create bylaws and we can go out looking for all these things, but I'm just not sure that I'm there at this point. I really question if that is the need, or we need to look more carefully on our land use planning as it's rolled out here, and give it the opportunity for the people to speak as to what they would like to see in their areas, rather than the iron hammer.
Right now, I have Deputy Mayor Hubley and then Councillor Greig.
So I echo everything that Mayor Bolivar-Getson just brought up, except I do know that I'm not in favor of the bylaw. I think we are ahead of our time. I have a major concern about interrupting a livelihood. We live in Lunenburg County, designated in 1995 as balsam fir capital of the world. Our forestry workers started at the break of dawn for a reason. I have a concern around the cost of enforcement when we're told that it's impossible to enforce it properly or 100%. I think it's also impossible to take a municipality of our size and paint every area with the same brush. We're so different and unique in so many different ways that I think there have to be other cost-effective ways to take care of this.
Thank you. Councillor Greig and then Councillor Haysom.
Thank you. Several months ago, maybe it might even been last year, I asked staff to bring a report to council on noise bylaw. Thank you. It was a great discussion. I gained a lot of information. I don't want to implement a noise bylaw. I don't want to police what people do on their property. But I receive quite a bit of information that I then can pass on to the residents I hear from regularly, and I would like to say thank you.
Okay. You, Councillor Hastings, you spoke. Okay. Okay, so I think that we kind of have a consensus, but I'm going to go around the room. The one thing that I do know, being in a rural community that I live in, but it's still very much activity with ATVs, motorbikes, all that kind of stuff. I get a lot of complaints about the noise of these mufflers, and it's been addressed to the RCMP. But the issue is, when they get the call, by the time they get to New Germany, somebody has already been texting, and excuse, but this is what they call it, po-po on the way to New Germany. And it's like, then they just disperse, the motorbikes and everything. And the RCMP are not going to follow them. They're not going to chase them. So a lot of the stuff that we want the RCMP to enforce with social media and the way things are now, it's absolutely impossible for them to get there in time to even be able to write out a ticket or something like that. So anyway, I'm going to go around the room right now. So we have three up. We have three options, okay, on the table, and we do understand some of the issues that are in some communities. The one that, the first one is to direct staff not to pursue the development of a noise bylaw.
We understood that council had asked for a report.
Right.
We didn't feel like you were at a position where we needed to put you into a binary,
right.
Yes, we're doing a noise bylaw or not. Mm-hmm. So your options are relatively broad. You could direct us to go ahead and start drafting a noise bylaw and begin planning some public engagement. So that's as far as I think we would tell you to go. If you did venture down that road, we would also suggest you write a letter to the MJSB requesting that they start exploring a regional bylaw enforcement model. If you think that there's merit here but you still have concerns or questions in a particular area, we're happy to hear what those are. We could go away and do further research. If you think that this is enough discussion, you can leave it at that. If you'd like to really close the book, you could pass a motion that says, you know, we'd like to direct staff to not pursue this any further.
Okay, Councillor Hasem.
So, thank you. I really appreciate all the information, and I understand that this is a complicated issue. I think that I'm having a little bit of difficulty with the way this conversation is going, because we've been given some really specific examples of why we need a noise bylaw, and what I'm hearing around the table is we don't want to impact economic development, or we recognize that there is a way of life that exists here in the municipality that we don't want to interfere with, and I don't think anyone's asking for that. No one has a problem with chickens and chainsaws. Great little catchphrase there, Michelle. But we do have some really specific issues around persistent noise issues at specific addresses. And if the noise bylaw is not the tool to use, and I'm hearing that it's not mostly because it's expensive and difficult, which aren't necessarily great reasons to say that we're going to just throw an idea out. Most things that are worth doing tend to be expensive and difficult. What is another tool that we can use to address the persistent issues at specific addresses? I'm not talking about chickens and chainsaws. So I don't know if I'm in support of a blanket noise bylaw, but we do have a problem here that we're all aware of, and I'm not comfortable with the answer of it's difficult and expensive and kind of, you know. There must be some other tool.
Councillor Bino.
This mic's getting a lot of turned on today. There's two folds to this, noise bylaw and bylaw enforcement. I am not okay with staff knocking on an RV and saying, you got to go, and dealing with that. We know that it's happening more. It's definitely happening more at Saw Pit Park. If the camper says no,
then what happens? So that's a question, I guess, I got first.
Sure. So currently, if we're having an issue where someone is belligerent relating to a municipal property, we do contact the RCMP, and they assess that on a case-by-case basis. So we did, for example, in the last week, reach out to them, and they did send a patrol car to go speak with folks who were blatantly disregarding the municipal press release asking folks to stay out of our parks. But it's not necessarily... It's something that we want to use judiciously because we know that the RCMP have other things that they need to be tackling.
Absolutely, and I hate for them to be taking away, but it's still happening, and we don't have a mechanism besides staff going out. So by completely shutting this whole topic down, we're not addressing that either. I also agree that I don't want to see a noise bylaw blanket across the whole municipality. That's not what I want either. It's these not even one-offs, the same place doing the same thing over and over and over and having no consequences of it. That's where my concern is in my district with this one particular business. And I know the RCMP are getting called out there every weekend, and it's always the same thing. We turn it down. They go, it goes back up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the answer is. So while, again, I'm not in favor of a noise bylaw across the municipality, I still want to address what's happening at these commercial spots. And I don't know what the answer is to fix that.
Alex?
So with where it is, there is that individual issue, there is the civil option that mm-hmm. your CAO has explained, which I know is costly and requires a resident to have to pursue it, but it is an avenue that's available. Mm-hmm. With relation to your enforcement around parks, we purposely structured it so you could pass that motion to look at a regional bylaw enforcement model without going down the road of a noise bylaw. If you feel that now is the time that with the efforts you're putting on upgrading the experience in your parks, that you want to also look at that with the MJSB, there's definitely a natural fit there because they're already engaged in some level of bylaw enforcement on the waste front. And we have had contact with a couple of other of our normal regional partners who have expressed some interest in looking at regional bylaw enforcement. So the appetite is there, but it comes with a price tag. Mm-hmm. So it's something that you can look for the MJSB to explore for you now, or you can mull it over a little longer.
Okay, I have CAO Tom McEwen with a question, I think.
Actually,
Jeff.
I have a question for Jeff. So in Halifax, my understanding is that they're looking at a system for short-term rentals, and they're dealing with it in residential areas and looking to require those to be owner-occupied. And then in cottage country, they're looking at different rules that would apply in the rural municipality. I'm wondering, within our MODL 2040, as it relates to zoning and the use of short-term rentals, which have to be there have to be zoned to be able to exist, are we able to put in the land use bylaw restrictions on things like noise, separate from a noise bylaw, in the land use bylaw specifically as it relates to short-term rentals in MODL?
No.
And yeah. That's our director of planning.
Very rarely
Jeff
does a
Mill.
Legal answer come yes or no. But
The land use planning is more about separating those uses that, like a type of use, say an industrial use that would produce noise, and a residential that would complain about that noise, keeping those uses away from each other so you minimize that. But a land use bylaw is deals with land use, not the activity that occurs on the land use or on the land.
Okay. So I might be wrong, but my recollection is that the King's Land Use Bylaw for Kings County specifically provides provision for the use of cannons in agricultural land and puts time limits on them in the land use bylaw.
Yeah, I'm not aware that they are doing that, and they might be doing that. Doesn't mean that it's right.
Councillor Haysom.
A question. Is it possible to have a bylaw that's specific to short-term rentals? So a noise bylaw specific to short-term rentals, is that a possibility? Is that a way around things? And not to say that you can't have quiet hours, like 11 to 6 or something. Is that a potential solution? Or for commercial, yeah, outside of agricultural or the other things that have provincial... provincial regulations. Yeah.
And then we have to still look at the enforcement, but I see where you're coming from. There was another hand there. Councillor Hopley, did you have... Mayor Deputy? Nope. Okay, so we're going to wrap this up. I knew it was going to be a long discussion. It was a good discussion. And so right now we can just... not make a motion at all. We can put one of these motions in front of us on the floor to see what happens, or we can direct, if I'm correct, we can direct staff just to go back and get more options for us, of which was specifically just mentioned about a bylaw about short-term rentals. So what's your wish? Councillor Greig.
Can we just leave it to mull over, and then at the next finance meeting under business arising, can we finish it off then? Is that...
We can do whatever council wants.
I don't want a decision made. I want to just process everything I heard this morning.
Yeah. And maybe we can direct staff to come back with maybe a few more. If there's something in Kings that is being happening, if there's something... Councillor Bell and then Councillor Hobley. Deputy Mayor Hobley.
A consideration. Is a possibility... that staff, from this discussion and from what was presented to us, do a summary story that could be shared in municipal matters that show the dilemma of where we are and ask for input either to their local councillor or to a central address here through our public relations officer for us to gauge better what the public actually want, and to help the public understand the dilemma that we're facing. Mm-hmm. Is that a reasonable thought? Mm-hmm.
Deputy Mayor Hobley and then Councillor Vino.
I agree with Councillor Bell and Councillor Haysom. I'd like to see us come back with some more information and no motion put on the floor today.
Okay, good.
While we're still waiting, could we maybe have this brought up at police advisory as well to gain their thoughts on? Oh, it has been there? Okay.
But we can put it on again. Okay, so we're going to wrap this up. I think we've hashed it over. Like I said, really good conversation. There is a problem, we know that, but trying to solve it is going to be a little bit of a dilemma. So we have given staff instruction. And we will have this come back on another agenda. And also, I think there's going to be correspondence going maybe into municipal matters.
Perhaps we can wait for the follow-up discussion to get us
and then get everything.
Give council a month to think. We'll come back with some more information specific to short-term rental regulation.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like that was the main area where we're missing something. So we'll bring this report back with a small covering on short-term rentals, and from there, council could then decide to do some form of public engagement or public messaging.
Okay. Everybody's comfortable with that? Good. We're going to take a 10-minute break.